Hello, folks, and good morning. This is Reed from WRHK in Columbia, Maryland, with your second in a series of Saturday podcasts for the Pit Blather. What I thought I'd do today is shorten up the podcast. Last week it was 54 minutes. I guess that was pretty long. So I'm going to try to keep it between a half an hour and 45 minutes. And then on the actual article itself, I'll have some links to some other things and things I find interesting or fun or something that I feel that would be a topic of discussion for us guys to keep going, like we're sitting around a table drinking beer, which is what I love about the Blather, by the way. Well, I thought I'd look at the last week's comments and articles and try to figure out what kind of things were left unsaid or that we didn't really agree on. And the main topic of conversation, I think, this last week has been George Hill and where to put him. George Hill is a recruit that we're getting in the 2016 class. He's the second running back of the recruits. Chantez Moss has already enrolled at Pitt and went through spring drills and looked very good, by the way. So the question is, and really it's Pitt of Dreams and myself and some other guys, we're talking about whether this superb athlete, George Hill, obviously he's very quick, as Pitt of Dreams has pointed out more than once. He's a very, very fast runner. Whether he should end up on offense or defense, and of course the final decision is going to be up to the coaching staff. That's the way it works in football. But as fans, we like to pretend we own the team, so to say. And so let's... I'm going to use my crystal ball here and try to figure out what the staff's going to do. I've gone over and looking back. I keep notes on articles I have written, kind of a running log. Guys in the military will know that. Kind of a running log or journal about predictions I've made and things like that. And I'm a little bit surprised. I'm actually kind of right on with a lot of stuff. Some of the things I've faltered pretty badly on. But I'm usually pretty good with kind of predicting where a player is going to be or how his player is going to do in his career. There's some surprises, of course. I mean, I really literally thought Jack Lippert was going to be a star for us. I mean, silly crap like that. I mean, you know, and I also Chris Woosner. I looked at him. Of course, he had a military connection. His father was a colonel in the Army up in Pennsylvania at the National War College up there. And I thought, okay, well, you know, he comes from a dedicated family, a lot of discipline in it. He's a big kid. He's pretty quick for a white guy. And I really thought he was going to play well for us. And, you know, he hasn't. Challingsworth, by the way, is the one. They kind of came in the same year, I believe. And Challingsworth is the guy that's kind of fleeted up to the top there. He's going to be in the top four receivers this year. And Chris Woosner has gone by the wayside. That's kind of harsh. Not by the wayside, but he's not going to be getting a lot of playing time this year. Anyway, back to George Hill. He's a young kid. As a Pit of Dreams has pointed out, he's a speedster. Was it 10.47 or whatever he listed the last thing in the 100-meter dash, which is very fast. And, you know, we posted up a video of Hill the other day. Now, I watched that video, to be honest, and I didn't see a star running back. I didn't see a guy that was running away from all the defensive backs like a POD has alluded to him being able to do. I saw him getting caught from behind rather often, to be honest. And I wouldn't say not a star running back. Obviously, he was a star running back, and he was recruited by some pretty big programs to play running back. One was Ohio State. And, you know, email made a point that if Ohio State is recruiting someone as a running back, we should follow suit. And I'm going to agree with that in the main. But it really depends on your needs on the team. I mean, I don't think Pat Narduzzi gives a crap what Ohio State wanted to do with this kid. And if we need him at defensive back, that's where he's going to end up probably. I mean, look, Pat Narduzzi has made a living both here at Pitt in last season, in his first year, and at Michigan State University, the years that he was there, of taking kids and putting them in a completely different positions and making stars out of them. I mean, we see this with O'Neal on the offensive line. I have a feeling Elijah Zeiss is going to be a star at linebacker. Boy, he looked pretty good in the spring game, and he was a wide receiver, looking at maybe even breaking into the top four or getting some playing time at wide receiver, and all of a sudden he's a linebacker now. So kids move around in college. This is what they do, and good staffs make sure that they maximize that talent. So, you know, I'm looking at the running backs we have on the team right now, and on the roster right now, we have, of course, James Conner, who's going to be coming back from a year out. He had his knee injury, and then, of course, he had his cancer, a bout with cancer, and thank God that went well with him. What a wonderful story that was, or is still. And that story's not going to end anytime soon, I think. But, I want to just make an aside, by the way. I've talked to James a few times, and I've talked to his Mike Gallagher, his surrogate father. And, boy, that is a great kid. I mean, he's above and beyond in so many ways and has nothing to do with football, to be honest. But, yeah, that's enough of that. Anyway, we have James Conner coming back. One of my favorites is Rashid Ibrahim. He's coming back for his senior year. He was hurt last year, too. And I always have watched him play, and I've always thought, why isn't he getting the ball more? Because once he gets the ball, he makes things happen. Now, he's really good getting that swing pass out of the backfield. But he also has a way to get through the line of scrimmage, too. He's not a heavyweight. He's not strong like Conner is. But he can move forward. And he's a quick one. We have Darren Hall, who's played a little bit as a freshman, kind of untested. And we have our star from last year, I guess you'd say is his star, Quadri Olison. Now, I think there's going to be a battle between Olison and Conner. I know the romantic vision is that James Conner's going to come in and play, and he's going to blow up the place, and we're going to win all these games. And you know, well, I wish that happens. I really hope that happens. But my heart says he's going to take he's going to take some time getting back into the swing of things, no matter how good shape he is. Playing football is not the same as running drills and having practices. He was out for a full year almost. He played one quarter. By the way, he got 90 yards in like a quarter and a half in that game, that first game last year. He was on a roll. But he might be set back. And the fact is, we have a kid that in Olison that had a 5.4 yards per carry average. That is not, that's a very good average. I mean, Conner was 5.9. Now, a half a yard is a lot when you're carrying a ball 298 times like Conner did. But Quadri Olison carried it a lot, too. And I figured out the other day that if Olison would have had the same number of carries that Conner had the year before, Olison would have had almost 1,700 yards rushing, and I'm sure a lot more touchdowns. Now, what we're going to miss, I don't think anyone's going to be able to replicate Conner's TDs. Unless he does it himself, of course. 26 TDs in 1 year is just freaking outstanding. And that's where the scoring we're going to miss. I'll talk about scoring a little bit later. Some interesting stuff about that, about the predictions for the offense. But anyway, so we have Conner coming back. We have Moss as a true freshman. We have Ibrahim coming back as a redshirt senior. We have Darren Hall as a sophomore coming in. And then Quadri Olson's returning as a starting running back. Now, we lost Chris James, and I think that's a really interesting story I'm going to keep my eyes on. I watched Chris James play 2 years ago in camp when Paul Chris had open practices. And I remember I was on sidelines with Chris Peek and some of the guys from Scout and Jerry DePola and guys like that, and we were watching him play. And we just looked at each other and said, this kid's great. And now there was a question mark of who was going to play back in 2 years ago. Was it going to be Hall? Or I guess Hall's a redshirt sophomore. I have to look that up. But anyway, between Hall and James, and we all felt James was going to be a star. You know, we thought he was going to be the next star. Maybe it was James and Olison, I guess it was. But he was so good in practice, fast. He could get to the outside, he could boom, boom through the center and go to one step, sidestep, and go down the sideline, and he was gone. I mean, he was that impressive. And I think, from what I've heard, you know, he had a bit of an attitude thing. He didn't like to be sat down. He'd like to have been sat down, I should say. And you know, I think one thing we all know about Pat Narduzzi at this point is he doesn't suffer fools gladly. He's very much hands-on head coach and my way or the highway type of thing. And we've seen that writ large with some players already with him. And I have a feeling that that was part of it. I don't think James looked at the depth chart and said I wasn't going to get running opportunities to carry the football. I think James knew he was going to be able to play if he had the talent and the skills to play. I think what it was is that something soured in the relationship between James and Pitt. And you know, just like we see Vojtěch and the other guys, you know, people take off and they transfer and they go other places. Now I think it's very interesting Chris James is going with Paul Christ. Now, there's established running backs at Wisconsin, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him really do well there. But that's okay. It's college football. It's the beauty of it. Things change every year. You have different players. That's what I love about it. Now, getting back to George Hill. He made his mark as a running back in high school. And his stats weren't outstanding. I mean, you know, he had a 9.0 yards per carry average in high school, which, believe it or not, for high school stars is a little bit low. You know, these kids, a lot of times, the 2 years previous, Hill had like a 12 yards per carry and 11 yards per carry, and then his senior year, he went down to 9 yards per carry. You know, in high school, these kids, they get the ball and they go on breakaway runs all the time. They're playing kids that are basically in, some of them are in 9th, 10th grade, you know, they're playing against. So I kind of discount what people do in high school as far as stats go. I don't think it matters a darn bit, you know, like how many touchdowns they throw or how many yards they throw for. I really think that the level of competition is so much different between high school and college that I just personally discount the stats. But anyway, Hill had a good year in his senior year in high school in Ohio. There's no doubt about that. But I look at our, more importantly, instead of looking at the running backs, I look at our defensive backs that we have coming up for this season. And I'm wondering, and not just this season, by the way, the season's 2017 and 18. And I'm wondering why Hill shouldn't play defensive back. I think he has all the skills. You know, when you have a running back with the same moves and actually the same anticipation, the same field of vision that a running back has, the defensive back has to be able to do that too. With the exception of something Lafayette Pitts never really picked up, that defensive back has to have his head on a swivel all the time. We know that. We've heard that phrase many times. And I found some film of George Hill playing defensive back, and I was very much impressed how he stayed with his receiver like butter on bread. And he was right there the whole time, and he had a really sense of where he was on the football field, where the sideline was. He kept checking back to the quarterback at the same time. He always had that hand contact on the defensive back shoulder or a hip. And I'm not a scout, but I thought he did really well there. So anyway, going into the 2017 season, we have Jordan Whitehead, of course. He's a safety. No one's going to take his spot. He's a wonderful player and a star. We have Terrish Webb's coming back. He's a senior. Reggie Mitchell's a senior. Avonte Maddox, who played well, he's a junior coming back this year. Ryan Lewis, who's a safety, he's a redshirt senior. And those are the upper-class guys. I'm not sure Hill's going to, don't get me wrong, I don't think Hill's going to come in and start in the defensive backfield right away. I think Damar Hamlin is going to be one of the guys that might be able to do somewhat what Jordan Whitehead did. I'm not sure he's the same type of athlete as Whitehead is, of course, but there's nothing wrong with a star and a four-star player coming in and sitting for a year either, by the way. So if Hill could be in the top, in the two deep, or maybe even, you know, one of the five defensive backs that we're going to rotate in and out, I think that's going to set him up really well for the future. Now, we did pretty well running the ball last year. I mean, we were, I think, 30th or something like that nationally, and I put a lot of stock in that, the ranking system, where we are nationally, especially within the ACC. And our pass defense was not very good last year. Overall, our passing defense for passing yards. We were 54th in the country. We gave up, the opponents had 385 attempts against us. They completed the passes 215 times. So figure out, what is that, almost 60%, maybe a little bit more. They got 2,791 yards passing against us and 18 touchdowns, which is kind of, it's a lot to give up. Now, the key there for me, and I haven't said told you the stat yet, but yards per attempt and yards per completion are very important for a quarterback, just the same way I think that yards per rush, yards per carry is for a running back. And our yards per completion defensively, they got 12.8 yards every time they threw the completed the ball against us. Not every time. They averaged out, of course. You know what I mean. And that's not a good number. It's a good number for a quarterback to have. It's not a good number for a defensive unit to have. Now, that really, I look at that and I say, we need to get help there. Because, especially this year and next year, I don't see our defensive line getting... First of all, I don't think it's going to be that great this year. I don't think it's going to be terrible like other people think. But I think that we're going to have some problems there. We don't have any depth. And I don't see a lot of... I know we have these camp and this other kid coming in the 2016 recruiting season. And they're, you know, they might get playing time and play well. But really, if you don't have that push in the offensive line, your defensive backs and safeties are going to have a lot of pressure on them. And we saw last year that when... you know, we said, okay, we're going to put all this pressure up front and we're going to put the defensive backs out on an island. And I'll tell you something, folks, they were throwing the ball over everyone's heads and completing long passes. We saw that time and time and time again. And it hurt. Those games we lost those games on long passes. Those big chunks of yardage that opposing quarterbacks and wide receivers got against us. We have to do something about that. And if it's not the defensive line that's going to be able to put that kind of pressure on. Now, I think we're going to have two good defensive ends. We have Price coming back at one end. And I think Hendricks, this new kid, is going to be pretty good. I don't think he's going to be a star, but he's going to be pretty good. We need two good defensive ends. But your defensive backs have got to be able to play ball. And, you know, when I'm looking at Reggie Mitchell, Ryan Lewis, Webb, they don't jump out at to me as being irreplaceable. And then below them, or behind them, I guess I should say, we have Malik Henderson, Philip Motley, Dennis Briggs, Dane Jackson, and Jay Stalker. Now, and then we have three walk-ons. None of those guys make me sit up straight and say, wow, that guy's going to be, you know, he's going to be a three-year starter. He's going to, you know, be a star. None of those guys do. You know, two or three of them will probably play, and I mean, this is how it is. They'll play, and they'll start, and they'll do okay, and maybe even one of them will be a star. But I think that you put your talent where it's needed, especially in college, that athletic talent, you put that that player where you need to have that player, not only this season, but in the future. And I think that's where George Hills should play. You know, and also, we were had the conversation, well, you know, he's going to play running back because Pat Narduzzi, on the letter of intent day, handed, you know, said, okay, Hill, you can play running back, and handed the ball to the running backs coach. That, you know, I don't, that doesn't mean anything to me at all. You know, these guys are so excited on LOI day, they could do handstands, and all of a sudden you think, okay, everyone's doing a handstand this season. So that doesn't matter. It'll all come down to what happens in fall camp. And I think that we're going to see George Hill move over to be to be a player on the defensive side, just like we saw Zeiss move over in the spring. So, that's pretty interesting. I hope that happens. Either way, I'm glad we got George Hill. We have a pretty good recruiting class coming in, I have to say. A couple other things we talked about is Matt Kavanaugh is the Hall of Fame, College Hall of Fame player, inductee. Up for it this year. And I took a minute and I looked back over all. There's 136 quarterbacks in the College Hall of Fame right now, and a lot of them were, let's say, pre-modern era. So I looked at, I went through them, and I made a short list of the ones that I think us older guys will remember, guys like Gary Bieben and Bob Greasy and guys like that. But because we have a lot of younger people reading and writing and commenting on here, commenting and reading, I should say, I wanted to go with a, kind of the more modern era. So Kavanaugh played 76, 77. So I started looking at 70 on. And I didn't list every single one. I wanted to get a flavor that I could impart to you guys about what these quarterbacks did when they got into, and how they got into the Hall of Fame based on what they did in their career. Now, you know, just to give a short background on Matt Kavanaugh, we know he was a starting quarterback at the championship game. He started on and off that season because he got hurt. And he was a starting quarterback in 1977, too. Commenter, I forget who it was, pointed out, I forget which commenter it was, that he was an MVP of the, both the Sugar Bowl for the national championship game, and he played well in that game. And the year after, he was a Peach, not the Peach Bowl, but the Gator Bowl in 1977. He threw four touchdown passes in a 34-7 win over Clemson, who were, by the way, we played this year too. It would be interesting. Anyway, he was a Sugar Bowl most valuable player, but his stats were... And it's not that it was a different game back then. You know, that, I think that's an excuse people come up with. Every time I go back and research 70s and 80s and compare them to, like, you know, like the 2000s, 2010s, you know, there's a bit of a difference. We're more pass happy now, but we're not like, it's not like night and day. There's what people would like you to think. It really isn't. Anyway, he had a 60 yards per game or 69 yards per game or something like that. Passing average in his career, which is pretty horrendous. Now, he had Tony Dorsett, and he had Elliot Walker, and he had guys that he was handing off to, but, you know, that's just not very good. He ended up with 3,378 yards passing, which is a good season for a single year these days. He was 13th overall, and he was All-American 1 year. So he played good football for us. He did well for us. He represented the school beautifully. And I like Matt Kavanaugh. Do I think he should be in the College Hall of Fame? I didn't before, and after doing this little bit of research, I'll talk about, I don't think he should be in it either now. If he gets in, I'll be happy, because he's a Pitt player getting in, and I like Matt Kavanaugh. But, you know, realistically, I try to look at things without my Pitt blinders on, my Pitt sunglasses on, and... yeah, I know sometimes you guys think that's negative, but I try to look at it from an outsider point of view sometimes. So here's who I listed down on my notes just from perusing the College Football Hall of Fame website. We got Andre Ware from Houston. He was a Heisman Trophy winner. Now, here's what I noticed about the quarterbacks in the Hall of Fame. Either they were Heisman Trophy winners or they had such sterling careers, not only winning careers, but statistically, that and won major awards, even aside from the Heisman, that it would be hard not to put him in the Hall of Fame. And I don't think Kavanaugh qualifies for that. But anyway, listen to this. We have Andre Ware, Houston. He was a good ball player. He, you know, didn't win a championship, but he won the Heisman Trophy. We have Peyton Manning. We know what he did at Tennessee, and wonderful. By the way, I don't really care what people do in the NFL. You know, I talk about Pitt football and College Hall of Fame as a College Hall of Fame. It's not the NFL Hall of Fame. I'm a firm belief that when I talk about football players, it's what they do at Pitt. I don't really care what they do. The fact that he was in the NFL for 14 years doesn't mean anything to me at all when it comes to talking about Kavanaugh going into the Hall of Fame in college. Okay, we have Bob Greasy. That's a name from the past. Back in the old days, he had won some major offensive awards. And, he played UCLA, and they were a great team. We had Charlie Ward, Heisman winner. Chuck Long. Now, there's one I thought, I wonder what Chuck Long is going in there for. And then I realized he had he was a four-year starter. He had 9,210 yards, three-year starter, 9,210 yards passing and 64 TDs. And again, he won like the Walter Camp Award or something like that. So after that, we have Danny Marino. We know, of course, he was great for us. A lot of interceptions, but he was a great player for us, and he certainly should be in the Hall of Fame. Then another one, Danny Werfel, played down in Florida, and I thought, Danny Werfel, I mean, I knew he was good and everything. Well, he won a national championship, and he won the Heisman Trophy, and he was runner-up the year before he won that. And then Doug Flutie. And I started thinking, Jesus, you know, excuse my language. I started thinking, man, Doug Flutie, I mean, he threw that wonderful thing, and he was a good, you know, scrambling back, and he had that Hail Mary pass against Notre Dame, I think it was. And, you know, he was a great story. And then I started looking, did a little research, and I forgot he won the Heisman Trophy. You know, 5'9". It was kind of amazing. He was a good ball player in college, so he deserved it. He's again, a Heisman winner. And then Gino Toretta, another player from Miami, and I thought, okay, you know. I remember when Toretta, I was overseas when Toretta played, but, you know, I thought he was kind of an average player. Then again, I did research, I looked him up, I said, holy hell, this guy threw for 1,000,000 yards, and he won the Heisman. And then Don McPherson, who we played against, of course, at Pitt, and he was a Syracuse running back, quarterback and running back. He ran the ball a lot. And again, I thought, you know, I knew he was good, and they won a lot of games. They never won a championship with him. They won Big East championships with him, but never national. And then again, I said, well, let me take a look at what he's actually done in his career. And he won, like, every offensive award in his senior year. The only thing he didn't win was the Heisman. I didn't realize he was so well awarded. It's like Aaron Donald won almost every defensive award 2 years ago. And McPherson, you know, just had a fantastic senior year and won a lot of games. And then, see, that's the thing. So those are the modern ones. And there was 136. I went through maybe three quarters of them and said, okay, this is a good sampling for me to make my decision on. And I don't put Mike Kavanaugh in that group. I don't see him. He didn't win major awards. He was an All-American. I think he was a second-string All-American, if I'm not mistaken. But then that's one of, you know, 44 people that year. And I don't. You guys that can have your own opinions about him, I'm glad he played a Pitt and everything. I just don't see him being the Hall of Fame inductee. Candidate's mine. I mean, you can put anyone up for candidate if you want to. So, anyway, that was my thoughts on that piece of discussion we had this last week about that news story about him being up for the awards, for the Hall of Fame. We also talked about our uniforms. You know, I guess the more and more I look at the uniforms, I say I understand why people like them. I love the fact that the script is going to be on everything. I think that, you know, we talk about a brand. I think that is obviously going to be Pitt's brand, and it should be Pitt's brand because it is, you know, rarely, very recognizable. When you see that, people know about the University of Pittsburgh and Pitt football. But let me separate the two. I mentioned this in the article I wrote not too long ago. There's a distinct difference between the University of Pittsburgh and Pitt football. It's not even close in my estimation. You know, we talk about athletics being the front porch. We talk about it representing the school. And, you know, I've read articles back and forth about whether there's a correlation of how good the football team is and how many students you have apply for it. And I think that's a bunch of crap. To be honest, Pitt turns away so many students, I don't think it matters. To be honest, the academic side of the university is really separate from the college, from the college athletic side. So, and I think it's that way at almost every school. It certainly is at Pitt. There's nothing wrong with having a great program. I mean, that's what we all want. But let's not go overboard and think that just because we have the script across the board in athletics, that is how people identify the university. I know from a fact that when I was overseas a lot. Not only was I stationed overseas for years, and then two tours, and then I traveled a lot to Europe. And my last 10 years in the Coast Guard, I did a lot of traveling around Europe and Northern Africa and Asia, and for various reasons. But I always got in conversations about football. But overseas, internationally, University of Pittsburgh is the University of Pittsburgh. It isn't Pitt. And believe me, Pitt wants to keep that because Pitt wants that tie-in. I'll say Pitt because none of us fans and students, alumni, none of us guys ever say the University of Pittsburgh when, you know, we went to Pitt. But the university wants to keep that very separate because they want that tie-in with the name Pittsburgh, because Pittsburgh now has become a very, very well-known city and tech magnet because of University of Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon, because of the medical UPMC and all the technological advances that have come out of the Western Pennsylvania region and the city itself. And so that tie-in is really very important to the image and to the entity itself of the University of Pittsburgh. Now, Pitt, nationally, if you want to talk to college football fans, they're not going to go, oh, the University of Pittsburgh. And that's where Peterson made his mistake. You know, Peterson was his own guy, and I got a million stories about him, but he didn't get it. He didn't really get the fact that nobody outside of, you know, Western Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio, maybe, nobody really cares about Pitt football much. And I don't mean that in a negative way. All I'm saying is that it's just that image, that brand, everyone knows Pitt is Pitt. It wouldn't have, it was to the detriment of the university's athletic programs to change the name, because nationally it just would have confused people. And not really confused them, but it would have been a change that didn't have to be made. I mean, I know as a big fan of the university's football team, it irritates me when I am watching TV or newscast and they say, oh, and the University of Pittsburgh played Notre Dame today. We all want it to be Pitt because that's what we feel it is. Excuse me. And so that's what the university's done. They've allowed the athletic department to go ahead and brand the whole, every part of the athletics and sports teams as Script Pitt. And that was a really good idea. And the colors are fine, everything. My thought on the uniform was I really would have liked to seen at least one aspect of the uniform that went back to the traditional things. I think, you know, whatever it is, I'm not a big uniform fashion guy, but a stripe on a leg or something that would have, when you looked at it visually, you would have said, oh, that's also Pitt, not just modern Pitt, but also the Pitt of the glory years. And but I'm also a firm believer that unless you're Nebraska, Ohio State, Penn State, you know, Notre Dame's even changed a little bit over the years, Alabama, those schools are so wealthy that they don't give a shit, they don't give a darn about apparel contracts. And that's who's, it's the tail wagging a dog with uniforms in college football these days. It's Nike and Under Armour and those guys that are saying, no, you're not sticking with the same uniform for 100 years here. You know, we have a contract with you for 10 years. We're going to do three iterations of this uniform, two or three iterations. We need to sell more. And the way we sell more is to make things change. I think it's too bad. I wish we weren't at that point, but, you know, the article came out the other day, how much money we got from the ACC from the 2016 season. What was it, $26 million or $28 million? That's a big increase, but it's still not going to be enough that we can throw away the apparel money. And that's just the nature of the beast of college football these days. I would love to see us find a uniform that everyone loves or can live with, and then stick with that. Keep a coach around for a while. I have my own ideas about if that's going to happen or not, but I hope it does. But and then forge an identity that also equates to winning on the football field, or that I should say winning on the football field helps forge the identity of the university's athletic programs, especially the football program. You know, I think we're years away from that. I think that Pitt has never been that kind of a program. Even in the glory days of 70s, you know, the mid-70s to the mid-80s, it's real romantic for us to look back at that and say, we were so wonderful, we were so great. But you know what? We were good. We won a lot of games, but we were kind of a decade long in 120 years of college football is not the big boys. We're not up with the big boys. And, you know, we went on some real hard times. But that's what happens with almost every football program. Unless you're the ones I mentioned before, that's the way it is. Will Pitt ever get to be that way? I'm really not sure. I'm not sure the university is going to invest the time and the energy to make football be the forefront of everything, to make it be the thing you think about when you hear the name of the university. When you hear about the University of Alabama, unless you live in Alabama and follow, the SEC football conference and follow Alabama football, you know, you don't think of it as an institute of higher learning. You think of Alabama as football. You know, Ohio State, you think of football. Penn State's a good university. It's maybe a little bit better, a little bit worse, whatever, depending on what year you're looking at. But it's on par with Pitt. Maybe Pitt's a little bit higher in a lot of things. But you still think of Penn State. You think of football. You don't think of the institution itself. And I think when you think of when you say University of Pittsburgh, you don't think about football. You think about the university. When you say Pitt, you think about football. So anyway, that's my two cents with uniforms. There's one last thing that I want to touch on, and I guess it has to do with the uniforms. You know, I made my opinions clear in my articles about what I thought, and I just did for 15 minutes here, talk about what I feel the uniform should be and should do for us. And everyone, a lot of people have said in conversations and on the message boards and, you know, through the blather, said, well, what about the throwbacks? The throwbacks are a nod to the past. And to that, I say the throwbacks are there for one reason, and that's to sell uniforms. That's it. And it's going to be a lot of fun to see those uniforms out in the field. It is. But that's all they are for. You know, therefore, it's a marketing tool, and that's all that is. And that's not a bad thing. I'm just saying that's what it is. Now, I know the fan emphasis and the fan wants is to really get that Penn State game and go out there in the throwback uniforms and have Connor out there and, excuse me, win that game going away. I was laughing at myself. But I think it'd be a real problem and a mistake to have the throwbacks on the Penn State on September 10th against Penn State. I don't think we should do it on Villanova either. I mean, but it should be for an important homecoming would be a good thing. But the thing about having it at Penn State is, one, it's an important game anyway. Fans are going to be excited about that game. It's going to be sold out anyway. I think if it isn't already, I think it's going to be sold out. And we don't need the extra excitement that the throwback is going to generate when it's worn by our kids. And even more importantly to me, because I tend to look at the cause and effect type thing, and sometimes, you know, on the negative side, I don't want the throwback uniforms to be associated with a loss if we don't win that game. I think that's a really important point. I think that, fans are fickle, and Pitt fans, I think, are pretty fickle. And, we tend to associate, you know, same old Pitt, and, you know, oh my gosh, here it goes again, and where have we seen this before? You know, and hopefully that'll change, and Narduzzi's helping to change that culture, I think. But we do have that. And if we wear those throwbacks and go out and get stomped by Penn State, or even just beaten by Penn State, which could happen, guys, I really don't want that associated with the throwback, with the love and the admiration we have for those teams and for the colors and for those uniforms that, guys my age, I'm 60, that we grew up with, and that you younger guys have heard so much about. Now, the Pitt script is a throwback. That's going to be part of the game, obviously. It's going to be on the helmets. But I think that you hold off on the rollout of the throwbacks to a different time and use it when it might be able to give us a better boost or just not be associated with something bad that could happen. Of course, we lose every game of the year. I mean, we're not going to, but you never know week to week which games you're absolutely going to win. So, anyway, we're hitting a 39-minute mark. I'm just going to try to keep it under 45. I am going to have to say sayonara. I'm taking the family out for Saturday afternoon runarounds, and I hope this is a good one. I also included in the article some websites that I think are pretty interesting. One is this NCAA Statisticians Manual, which, I was looking up the stats to support the defensive back talk, you know, information that I just gave you. And I started looking at that. I was laughing. I said, I had no idea someone wrote something like this. Anyway, take a look at that. It's really pretty interesting. The NCAA has a wealth of information, not just stats, but crap you wouldn't even think that they would look at. I think they have to justify themselves in a lot of ways, and this is one of the ways they do it. So anyway, have a great weekend. If I can put something up tomorrow morning, on Sunday I will. If not, I will say sayonara, and you'll see something written on Monday morning. So see you later. Bye-bye.